Guys, so welcome back to Midnight in the Mountains. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing well today. Laura, how are you?
I'm okay. Hanging in there. It's been pretty nice out. I was outside in a short sleeve shirt today, so thankful for that.
Yeah, I think it actually hit almost 70 degrees here today. I was driving around with the windows down and the tunes playing.
70? Oh my gosh. It only got to like 45 here.
Well, the joys of living in the southern part of the United States, we do get a little bit of warmer weather.
Yeah, just a little bit.
But to be fair, you know, for me, I actually traveled up north last weekend. I went skiing up in Indiana, and that's the coldest I've been all year round, because on Friday it hit 10 degrees in Indiana, and that's pretty cold.
That's really cold. I'm over the cold, but I wouldn't mind some snow, because we've only had snow like, I don't know, once this year, you know, a couple times, but it was really on the ground for a little bit, and then it went away.
I haven't saw, here in Tennessee, I have not saw snow at all this year. None. Not even one time have I saw snow this year, and I'm very sad about that. However, when I was up in Indiana, they were making snow for the slopes, and that Friday night when it was so cold, the cold didn't really bother me that much. You know, I was dressed in layers and whatnot, but they were making snow, so when you were going down the slopes, you would get blasted by this icy mix of snow they're blowing right in your face, and it was like I had to close my eyes when I was going down the slopes, so there was like 5 or 6 seconds where I had to have my eyes closed, making sure I didn't run into anybody, and, you know, no trees and no people. And so it was kind of interesting.
That sounds a little dangerous.
I mean, maybe just a little dangerous, but it was fine.
Oh my God.
So we stayed for 2 days. We stayed Friday and Saturday. Saturday, it was like 50 during the day on Saturday, and then like maybe like 40-ish at night. And, but it was still like the snow still was good. I mean, we skied from 4 p.m. till they closed at midnight that night. So, I mean, that's a good 8 hours worth of skiing, and I would do it again in a heartbeat.
But so you only go like once a year. Don't you get really sore after you go then? Because you're not doing it, you know, that often.
I didn't this time. And we didn't go last year because it didn't work out for my group of friends. But the year before, we went, and I was pretty sore, not the first day, but the second day. I was really, really sore. But this time, no, I wasn't real sore. My hips a little bit, but like nothing an Advil won't take care of.
That's how you know we're getting old.
But, you know, my job's kind of, I do a lot of walking around at work. I mean, I do between like 10 and 15,000 steps a day at work.
Yeah.
So it's pretty active. So I'm in pretty decent shape. I mean, I'm not going to run a marathon anytime soon, but 8 hours of skiing, no problem.
Better you than me. I tried snowboarding in high school, and then my aunt would try to take me snowboarding, and it was like, I mean, I kind of got the hang of it. I only did the bunny slope, though, but it's, talk about using muscles you didn't even know you had. You're so sore the next day. And then half the time I'd bail out and land on my knees or to stop myself because I'm like, I can't turn my board. This is, yeah, no, you will not see me back on a ski slope ever again. So
I did fall one time. It was getting towards the end of the night on Saturday, and I think I was getting a little tired. And we were on the hardest slope they had, the steepest one. And on Saturday, the snow was getting a little slushy because of how warm it was. And I'm doing my cuts, and I'm, you know, going down the hill nice and, you know, cleanly. And I turned, and my uphill ski hit a patch of slush, which had been doing all night. But I think I was getting so tired that it threw me off enough that I landed, and I probably slid for 50 feet, maybe 60 feet downhill.
Oh my gosh.
And because it was so, I was moving, you know, I had quite a bit of speed. I wasn't hurt or anything, but I remember laying there, sliding down the hill, thinking to myself, well, I guess this is how I'm going to finish going down the hill, is on my back sliding, which eventually it kind of, I slowed down enough to where I could get back up and finish it. But yeah, it was just like, I'm just laying there. I'm like, okay, I can stop sliding at any time now.
Oh, that's scary. That would freak me out.
And when you ski a lot, like, you're going to fall. Everybody falls. You know, at some point or another, you're going to fall. And you just kind of learn to just kind of ride with it. Like, don't freak out. You're going to stop at some point. Try not to lose your skis. Try not to lose your pole. Just, you know, just kind of go with it. Go with the flow.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
And as for the snowboarding thing, there is no way I could snowboard. I've tried when I was younger. I tried, and I don't know, there's just something about skiing that feels more natural than snowboarding, especially like getting on and off the lifts. I don't think I could do it with a snowboard. Skis, pfft.
That was definitely hard to get on and off the lift, for sure.
Yeah, like I see those guys do it, and you know, they got to unstrap everything, and then, you know, kind of like scooch, 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 scooch. Whereas on skis, you know, it's nice and smooth. You know, you just kind of slide up in there and you're ready. I don't know. I just couldn't do it. Do you have any other plans for the next week, or, you know, what do you got planned?
I really don't have much of anything. Kind of just been laying low lately. I wish I had some exciting plans, but not really, no.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is kind of like my slow time in the year, you know, like middle of February, March, and part of April. Like, I really don't have a whole lot planned. Like, you know, I can't go kayaking, you know, and the weather's like 50s and 60s, which you can get out and about. But I usually, yeah, just kind of my slow time. But now I have something to do with you every week, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I know. It kind of helps break up the boringness of whatever, because it's kind of like, oh, what are we gonna do this time? And then I sit down and I research and I start typing, and it kind of brings me back to when I was in school doing papers. But it doesn't feel daunting and annoying. It's exciting, you know, you're learning new things. So I really enjoy it. Because, I mean, you had brought up the idea of wanting to do cave paintings and petroglyphs. And I'm thinking, okay, and I'm thinking in my head, how can we relate that to paranormal? And I'm not even really thinking about it. And then I go to look in it. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is totally paranormal. And then I'm learning about, you know, the first one they found and all this stuff. So it's pretty cool.
It's kind of like a nice mix of like old history type of things, which I'm kind of interested in. But there's also, you know, some of these paintings, and we'll get into that a little bit later. Like, some of these paintings show things that could be out of this world.
Yeah, some strange stuff. I almost think, too, some of it is, I don't really know, maybe it's stuff that is still here, but we just can't see it today. It's in another dimension, or we're just not able to perceive it.
I like the idea of even maybe aliens. Could have been that our ancestors were visited 20,000 years ago, 30,000 years ago, maybe even 40,000 years ago.
Yeah. I bet that would have scared the hell out of them.
Could you imagine? I mean, we would be scared today, you know, if aliens showed up. Now imagine, like, the Neanderthals seeing something flying through the sky, or, you know, landing with, I don't know, you know, something that looked, let's say, like a little green man or a little gray man. You know, what did they think?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, even showing them something like a cell phone, you know, would probably, they'd probably run away screaming, or who knows?
Yeah, exactly. So I think we should get into this. I know that you got a couple articles, or a couple of caves paintings that were in the Appalachian Mountains area. So I'm going to let you take over.
Yeah, so I'll pretty much start with that. Doing my research, these petroglyphs can be found throughout the world. And this is not a cave painting, but I thought it was interesting to note that the oldest known art was dated back 73,000 years ago to a rock face in South Africa, and it's said that it goes further back than any known cave art. The oldest known cave painting was found in the Spanish caves of La Pasiega Mal... I don't know what I'm saying. Maltreviso.
Sounds pretty close.
Yeah. And it's said to be painted by Neanderthals 64,000 years ago. And I apologize for butchering that name. The earliest images were people, animals, and hybrid figures that were thought to be of some spiritual significance. What I have for the Appalachian area, which I didn't even think I was going to stumble across Tennessee, but I did, and I thought it was very interesting. There is the Cumberland Plateau, which stretches through parts of Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama, and Georgia. The indigenous people continued to create cave art in this region all the way to the 19th century. Jan Smyk is a archaeology professor from the University of Tennessee, and he has explored a bunch of these caves down here, and supposedly there's about 9,000 of these caves recorded in the limestone and sandstone of the Tennessee bedrock. And he suspects that there could be about 400 to 500 of these caves that do have these petroglyphs and this cave art in them. And how, like, 9,000 caves in Tennessee? That sounds crazy to me.
It's really interesting that even when you're just walking around, like on trails, you know, anywhere around my area, in the Middle Tennessee area, you will find caves everywhere. Like all the rivers that we canoe down, and, you know, you only canoe down a short section. Every single one of them has at least one cave in that section.
Really?
It's from the limestone. Limestone gets dissolved by water.
Right.
And so when you have, you know, the mountainous areas and the water where it drains into the mountain,
mm-hmm.
it'll start dissolving away the limestone. So there are a ton of caves around here. In Kentucky, Alabama, Georgia. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That makes it, 'cause 9,000 sounds like a whole lot, but when you put it that way, it kind of clears it up a little bit. So Jan suspects there could be about 400 or 500 of these caves that have this art in it. And many of the Cumberland Plateau caves feature spiritual figures in them. And there's a figure that looks like a man that changes into a bird, which kind of reminds me of the Mothman. And the Virginia Mothman is right around the Appalachian area.
Oh, yeah. Very true.
Here's a quote from Jan. He says, "There's a cave that's actually relatively early in time in Middle Tennessee that has a number of depictions of box-like human creatures paired with a more normal-looking human," he says, "and they are interacting with each other in relation to what appears to be a woven textile." He goes on to say that he has found cave art showing humans hunting or engaging in magical activities such as flying, and there's also drawings of circles and serpents. And then here's another quote from Jan that says, quote, "We know that these folks had recognized multiple layers of reality, and humans only occupy one of the layers in the middle," he said. "But they interacted with and were influenced by a celestial world and upper world that had certain creatures and spirits associated with it, and an underworld that had other spirits associated with it," end quote. So when I was looking this up, this article was from 2013, and it said that this was the oldest known cave painting in the United States that had been found. So I wanted to see what the oldest known cave painting that had been found as of to date. So I did a little quick search, and it still came up an article from July 4th, 2022. It says that Dunbar Cave State Park has the oldest known cave art on the continent, said Jan Smyk, who a distinguished professor of anthropology at the University of Tennessee. The 8-mile-long cave is located in Clarksville, Tennessee.
That's super interesting. Clarksville's it's not that far away from me. I'm about, I don't know, maybe an hour or so away from Clarksville. It's more known for there's a military base. That's where Fort Campbell is, basically right outside of Clarksville, where the 101st Airborne is located, which is a pretty famous military unit. Also, it makes a lot of sense that there's a lot of caves in that area because it's close to the Tennessee River, which is a, you know, fairly large river that splits Tennessee. And I could see, you know, all the water making a bunch of caves, you know, even 20,000, 30,000 years ago for sure.
All right, so then I looked a little more, and this actually came up when I did a little search, and I found one of the largest known caves in North America as of May 6, 2022, so I don't know that they've discovered anything else since then. It's in Alabama, and the cave name is the 19th named cave. Very original.
Very unique.
Yeah. So if you enter this cave, you need to crouch or you need to crawl to go through it. And they used mud to create the petroglyphs, so they call them mud glyphs. But I thought this was pretty neat. Amongst the art is an 11-foot serpent-like figure. There's also insects, birds, and human-like figures. And there's a theory that the serpent figure and unexplained creatures may represent the spirits of the underworld. The size of the drawings may represent the significance of their importance.
So that's kind of interesting where, like, if they make something bigger, it's more important to them versus something smaller?
Right. And I had wondered that, too. I was kind of thinking, well, is it because it's of a more importance or is it just because it's a bigger creature? I mean, how do they know that for sure?
I mean, it kind of makes sense that, you know, if in, you know, human history, usually if something's bigger, that means it was more important to them. You could look at the pyramids in Egypt with the biggest pyramids were the most important to them. Or even in Rome, you know, a lot of the bigger buildings were the more important buildings there. So I could see where it's almost like human nature, where if it's something important, you make it bigger to show how important it really is.
Yeah, I could see that. And what they, when they thought this was, that these were done, was somewhere in between 660 and 949 AD. And it was Native Americans that had lived in the area. And so I have a quote here, and I'm not exactly sure who wrote this quote, but I'm assuming it's the people that actually went into the caves and the researchers on this particular cave. But I will put a link in the show notes so that you guys can actually see this. But it says, quote, "Caves were considered to be pathways to the underworld, juxtaposed with pre-contact cultural landscapes and their large-scale, organized sedentary communities," the researchers wrote. "In those settlements, Native Americans in the southeast built mounds by which they could ascend to the spirits of the upper world for religious interaction." And it goes on a little more here. It says that the large figures drawn in the 19th unnamed cave were, quote, "elements in the broader sacred spiritual landscape of pre-contact Native Americans," end quote.
It's so cool that, you know, there's all this. I never knew about the caves. I mean, I know about the caves around here, but I've never heard about cave paintings in Tennessee or anywhere around this area. I always had heard them in, you know, like France and in Australia and Spain, you know, like European, African. And I have a good one from Australia, but I never knew about any in the United States. So, yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I had always heard that they were out west, which was originally what you and I had been talking about, saying, let's do cave paintings out west. And it wasn't really until maybe the last month or so I've heard on another podcast that they were talking about finding petroglyphs on rocks down in Tennessee, which I had completely forgotten about when we were talking about doing this episode. But it is pretty surprising that we can find them pretty close to home.
Yeah, 100%. And I might have to make a trip up to Clarksville this this year and see if, I don't know if those caves are open to the public or not. I wonder. I'll have to look it up and see.
So when I was reading this, the one original article that dated back to 2013, it said that Jan, the professor, they were keeping all the caves secret so they didn't get destroyed, which is completely understandable. And then I had searched for any updates, and that's where I got the information that it was located in Dunbar Cave State Park. So if, you know, that's still open and we could go there and see some of that stuff, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, it would be. That'd be really cool. I'll have to look it up. I'll have to ask around because I have some friends that are a lot more traveled around Tennessee than I am, and maybe they would know if those caves are open or not.
Yeah, for sure. Let me know. That's interesting.
Yeah, so my big story for this week is the cave paintings out in Australia. They were done by the Aborigines in the central part of Australia, kind of what you would call the outback. And it's in this particular one are located in the northwestern part of Australia. And these ones are dated to about 30,000 years ago. So they're very, very old. And I think what really caught my eye to these is that the Aborigines, you know, didn't have any contact with any other humans up until when Australia was founded, which I believe was the 1600s, if I'm not mistaken, was when the Europeans started settling Australia. I believe that's right. I'd have to double check. But their paintings are of white people. Their skins are white, whereas the Aborigines are brown or black skinned. And so they wouldn't have been able to see a quote unquote white person for, you know, till whenever the Europeans showed up, you know, way later in their culture. So that's what caught my eye initially. But then when I started looking at it and reading through this article here, is that when you look at these paintings, and I'll post a link in the show notes so you guys can see these pictures that we're looking at. The people they paint, of course, have white skin. They have very large eyes, almost like if you think of a gray man, you know, like a stereotypical gray man, really large eyes.
Like a gray alien, you mean?
Yeah, like, you know, like a stereotypical gray alien, you know, they have really large eyes, yeah. They have a bigger size head. Usually they're posted with like, you know, very small nose or no nose at all, kind of a smallish mouth compared to the rest of the body. And that's what these paintings look like. I mean, they look like a stereotypical gray man, but they were painted 30,000 years ago. They drew like a halo around their heads that could be like a helmet, or it could be a halo, I guess, you know. And that's what really caught my eyes. And I want to talk about what the Aborigines say about it, because they're the ones that painted it. So they call these creatures the Wanjinas, and they are sky beings or spirits from the clouds who came down from the Milky Way and created the earth and all its inhabitants. The Wanjina looked upon the inhabitants and realized the enormity of the task, and then returned home to bring back more of them. Which, that's a fairly common creation story, especially, you know, in different tribes. And the other part that really got me was the reason they painted these people, it was to basically worship them. You know, they wanted to, you know, wanted them to come back, wanted them to teach them the ways of the Wanjinis. One other portion of this is that, and this is pretty controversial, is that around these paintings, they have found some geological rocks around here that say that, you know, they could even be as old as 174,000 BC. Which would be 176,000 years ago. And that would have been like Neanderthals. There wasn't even modern humans during that time. I found that really interesting. And I know this being a podcast, it's kind of hard to think about the picture I'm trying to paint of these paintings. But when you guys look at them, this exact one I'm looking at, that's the first thing that pops in my mind. Gray man. Alien. And it just makes me wonder, you know, did aliens visit these Aboriginal people way back in the prehistory portion of our species? And if they didn't, what are they painting these white-skinned people up? I mean, did they see themselves in white skin? Did they, you know, humans don't have huge eyes. You know, there's not a whole lot of species that have very huge eyes, like maybe owls, you know, compared to their head space. So it really just sparks the imagination in me.
I have so many things going on in my head all at once right now. When you just said owls, that totally threw me for another, like, I'm going down one path and I'm branching off all these other paths. When you said owls are very linked to paranormal activity. I know they can be linked to a lechuza, which is, it's like South American witch. I believe it's Mexican. But besides the point, it's also known for like owl sightings have something to do with paranormal. They're also linked to alien sightings. So when you said about the owls having the big eyes like aliens do, that just kind of made something in my head click.
I've never heard that before. That's super interesting.
Yeah, there's a whole lot into that. And here's the other thing, too. When you first started talking about it, how do we know exactly that these figures were light-skinned? Maybe that's the only thing that, you know, the only material or substance they had that color to be able to write on to the caves with that.
That's a pretty good point.
Here's another ridiculous thought, but I mean, who knows? What if they themselves look something like these aliens? What if they were drawing each other? And we have no clue because it was so long ago. And I mean, maybe they were all just made of like little... I mean, okay, so that's ridiculous. I was going to say maybe they're made of like cartilage or whatever, and they've already decomposed and we found no bones. Or maybe the government did find bones and it's in the Smithsonian and we don't even know about it. But like...
I think I like the idea of, you know, maybe they were painting like self-portraits. The only thing about that, though, is, you know, these people still exist today. These people still live in the outback of Australia. They're a protected society, I guess, is what they call it over there. And, you know, they look like modern humans. You know, they're not very different from me or you, you know, other than like skin color and stuff like that. But their proportions, maybe that's the best way I want to put it. Their proportions are, you know, exactly the same as ours. They have, you know, they're not proportioned like their paintings are, right? They don't have huge eyes. They don't have, you know, a small nose or, you know, a big mouth or, you know, even like an outsized head. Now, if there was bones, now that would be super interesting. You know, if they found a fossilized skeleton with something with like a big head, man, that would change everything. That wouldn't even be human per se.
Yeah, I made myself sound real dumb too because
no, not at all. I mean, I don't take that as being dumb at all, but because it's an interesting thought, you know, how did they get inspiration to draw these things? You know, they didn't, unless it was something they saw,
right?
So if they saw it, what is it? I don't know. Now, I have saw in other cultures, especially African cultures, there's a tribe, and I'm pulling this out of my memory, where they do body deformation, where they, you know, change their body to different shapes. They'll stretch their earlobes out or their lips, or even sometimes they would take a baby's head and they would, because when babies are born, their skulls are very soft. And so what they would do is they would wrap the head up a little bit and they would make almost an elongated type head. That was their culture. That's what they did. And I thought about that, you know, maybe these Aboriginals did some sort of body modifications when they were younger. And that would kind of, you know, you could make the head a little bit more elongated. I don't think you could change your eye shape, I mean, compared to the rest of your body. But maybe, you know, maybe it just exaggerated a little bit. Could be. I mean, could be a thing. So I did look that part up and I couldn't find, you know, in the modern Aboriginals, they don't do that today. Like they don't practice, not in Australia, they don't practice that body tradition as some of the African tribes do. So I it could be, maybe it's been lost in time. Maybe they saw an alien. Maybe they got drunk on something and just started drawing on cave walls. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know, but it sure is fascinating.
It really is. This, the more that me and you kind of get into some of this stuff, it's so, you know, what I wouldn't give for a time machine to go back and see, how did this get done? You know, how did they do this?
Me too. I would love to, if I was guaranteed to be able to know for a fact that I could come back to right now, I'd sign me up.
Oh yeah, 100%. I'd be on the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Like seeing the pyramids built.
Yeah.
How cool would that be? Or, you know, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, you know, the like, or even any of the Seven Wonders of the Ancient World. Cause I think the pyramids are the only ones left, I believe, but any of those, to see them like in person, oh, dreams.
Yeah, I agree. And so part of what made me say about them possibly drawing self-portraits is because maybe those were there before those people were even there, because I don't know if you've really heard a whole lot, but it kind of seemed to be like a trend in paranormal podcasts the last like few months through the winter. Everybody was talking about the pyramids and how they were built, and they're thinking now that maybe they were built before the Egyptians were even there, and the Egyptians repurposed them and used them as tombs because they're seeing that it just doesn't really add up to everything, and they're finding different things out. So I don't know. That's kind of what made me come up with the wild theory that I had.
I mean, that's not a horrible theory. You know, like they said in the article, you know, they found some geological things around there that dated those to way, way earlier. So, yeah, so maybe they are, maybe it was a self-portrait of somebody that was there that you would think it would take a lot of technology to get here. And they probably have better ways of describing themselves than using paint on the side of a cave. But I still like the idea.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was my big one. That was the one that I think I saw a show about this particular one. And that's why I wanted to talk about it, just because of how surreal the pictures look. And I invite everybody to look at the show notes afterwards so you can take a real good look at this. And so in my other, you know, looking for cave painting, I came across Lascaux Cave. And it's located in southwestern France. It was discovered in 1940 by Marcel Ravidat and his dog, Robot. He was investigating a hole left by an uprooted tree, and when he went inside to kind of explore this cave, he came across these cave paintings. And the cave paintings are done of horses, deer, and aurochs, which I think is an early form of cows, I believe. The thing that caught my first thing about this particular cave that caught my attention was not so much the cave paintings themselves, which they're really, really super cool, but of the problems they have with keeping these historical artifacts, keeping them so everybody can see them. So, like I said, the caves were discovered in the early 40s, and so they opened up. There was a bunch of people coming to visit them, and by 1955, so not even 15 years later, they had deteriorated so badly that they had to close them to the public. That there was like fungi growing, there was moss growing on top of them. So they kind of went in there and they started trying to do some climate control. I mean, and you got to remember this was the 60s, but try to, you know, climate control it to try to, you know, keep this stuff from being destroyed because it's, you know, it's very unique paintings. And they basically failed. They couldn't, you know, control it well enough to let people come in there. So they've closed it off. It's been completely closed off since, I believe 2008, because in 2008, it started growing black mold, which you hear about black mold, like growing in people's houses when they have water leaks and how dangerous it is, to humans. So they closed it off in 2008 and they actually built a replica of it, so that people could actually see, even if it's a replica, they could actually still see the paintings as they were back in the 50s and 60s. But I found that kind of interesting, that these caves, some of them have been sealed up for so long, that's what saved them, that we can see them today. And then that we went in there and just from our breathing in there and changing how much water vapor and the stuff that's on our skin and whatnot, just really does a huge number on these caves.
Yeah, and I never would have, I wouldn't think that either, which is, it sucks that that happened.
Yeah, you know, you want to save this stuff for, you know, for everybody to see. And I think the story before, it, out in Australia, the caves are kind of used lightly. Like, they are caves, but they're still kind of exposed to the elements, and they've lasted, you know, for 30,000 years because of the... they're not like in direct sunlight, but they're not like deep down in a cave either. You know, they're not like a mile underground. Whereas Lascaux, with it being completely sealed up, you know, it was real stagnant air. You know, there wasn't a lot of change in humidity and there would be mold and stuff growing in there, but not so bad. But we come in there and we're like, hey, this is really cool looking. But yeah, it's kind of sad that way.
Yeah. I mean, it's changing the ecosystem.
Very true. Very true.
And I'm going to add this little part because I did find this cave also and I wrote about it a little bit. But I found that they had seen, it was similar to yours, that the animals that were seen were deer, bulls, and horses. And then you had said the one that was similar to like a cow, so that would make sense. And I also read that they saw some kind of strange looking thing. It looked like a horse that had a horn. So they suspected a unicorn. And it said that the unicorn may or may not have been pregnant just because of the way it was drawn. And then the other part of it was that it was this hunting accident between the man and the bison, and it had something to do with that there was possibly a wizard or a sorcerer type figure in this cave painting.
Oh, how interesting is that?
Yeah.
I wonder if we can call the wizard Merlin. You know, is he?
Yeah, maybe. But it said, I don't know, did you mention it, but I saw that it said they were dated back to 17,000 years ago.
Oh, yeah, I didn't mention that portion, but yeah, 17,000 years ago. Think about that. Think about how long that's been there.
I can't even to sit here and think about all these years ago. I can't even wrap my head around it. And the fact that they can date the stuff back and know how old it is just blows my mind. I can't even comprehend that.
It's super interesting. I'm not exactly sure how they dated these particular paintings, but a lot of times things that are like, you know, less than 35,000 years, they'll use what they call radiocarbon date. So they'll basically take the carbon in there and see what mm-hmm. isotopes and how much isotope of that particular part of carbon is. And that'll give you a good date on how long ago it was.
So I knew it had something to do with carbon dating, but I didn't know the details at all.
It's super interesting when you look into it because, you know, the farther back you go, you have to use different elements to date it. For instance, uranium. Uranium has a half-life of about 2 billion years. When you find really old rocks, you know, some of the earliest rocks of the Earth, that's how they try to date those, is the uranium that's contained inside there because they know what the half-life of uranium is.
Hmm.
It's super neat. It's really really super nerdy and scientific, and I love it.
I think it's really cool. I like learning little facts like that.
Mm-hmm. And you could also use boron. Boron they use for like stuff that's I think like 10 million years. And I'm going off memory here. I could be a little bit off on that particular date. Another one they use is radon, and that's even older because the half-life is even longer than boron is. So yeah, I mean, they used a bunch of different elements to date this stuff. So I don't know what they used here. Probably carbon dating because it's not quote unquote that old, even though 30 or 17,000 years is pretty old to me. But in the grand scheme of things, it's just a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, that's a scary thought.
It kind of is, you know. Think about, you know, if the Earth is 4 billion years old, you can't even wrap your head around
it. No, not at all. Not at all.
But I think that was the stories that I had for this week. Did you have any more?
Nope. That pretty much about wraps it up, really, for this week.
I think I learned a lot out of this.
I did, too.
Especially the stories about Tennessee that I didn't know about. So that was super interesting to me. And I think that is going to deserve a follow-up at some point or another. Maybe this summer. Maybe I can sneak on over there and see what I can find.
That sounds really cool. That's a good idea.
So I think yeah, we'll wrap it up for this week. I want to thank Laura again for having me on. I really, really enjoy doing this. It's been a lot of fun learning about the paranormal and the spooky things in the world.
Yeah, you're welcome. You definitely don't need to say thank you. I just need to say thank you to you that I have someone that wants to sit here and, you know, bounce ideas back and forth with me and stuff. So it's good. And plus, it's nice because we do live so far away, and we've been good friends for so long, and, you know, you're the type of friend that we don't talk for 5 years, and we can pick up and be right back to where we were, but why? Life is so short. Why live life like that? Why not keep your friends closer? So I think it's a good thing all in all, so yeah.
Yep. I definitely enjoyed it, and I will say, yeah, even if we don't talk for a year, we can just pick right up where we left, yeah. And it's just like, okay.
Yep, for sure.
Let's go.
Yeah, 5 years was definitely an exaggeration. But anyways, so I'm going to say, you know, the usual thing. You guys can email us at midnight_inthemountains@yahoo.com. Hit us up on Instagram in a direct message at midnight_inthemountains. And all those links will be in the show notes. And if you guys wish, we would really appreciate if you would follow us and give us a rating and review. That will help, you know, us get noticed a little more and get some more listens. So, thanks for listening.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Alrighty, bye.